Good afternoon. I'm Corey Welt of the Russian Eurasia Program here at CSIS. We're delighted to have as our guest and speaker this afternoon the Honorable Nino Berdjanadze, Chairwoman of the Georgian Parliament. The Honorable Berdjanadze has served as the head of Georgia's parliament since November 2001. She has crossed the border from before the Rus Revolution to after. Before she served as the chairwoman, she's had a distinguished career in parliament as a parliamentary deputy since 1995, and prior to her current post, she served as head of the Committee on Constitutional, Legal Affairs, and Rule of Law, and the Parliamentary Committee on Foreign Relations. Chairwoman Berdjanadze was also, as you all know, a key participant in Georgia's Rose Revolution, and served with distinction as the interim president of Georgia from November 2003 to January 2004. She has also been very active in her career in international organizations and in academia. She served as a vice president of the OSCE Parliamentary Assembly for several years, and also served on many other committees within the OSCE. Before entering politics, she was a professor in the Department of International Relations and International Law at Tbilisi State University. She's the author of more than 20 articles in Georgian, English, and Russian, and has published a monograph on law and international organizations. Chairwoman Berdjanadze has received law degrees from Tbilisi State University and Moscow State University. Madam Chairwoman, you represent a Georgia today that has gone through a trying several months and has emerged, I would say, unscathed. The diplomatic crisis, the closure of the border with Russia for trade and travel, a steep rise in the cost of gas imports, this has all posed a difficult test for Georgia, but one that seems to have passed for now. And what's more, the experience appears to have done a lot to consolidate Georgian society and perhaps to provide a real opening for dialogue between the government, parliament, and an array of political and social forces in Georgia that can help move forward some of the most challenging internal reforms that Georgia faces today on issues such as the judiciary, business law, and privatization. Georgia's relations with Europe and the U.S. have simultaneously also continued to deepen, as you know. On both sides of the Atlantic, including most recently within the U.S. Congress, we have heard increasing support for Georgia's NATO aspirations and for the reforms that will underpin its membership prospects. At the same time, the challenge of restoring normal relations with Russia remains, as well as that of resolving conflicts with Abkhazia and South Ossetia. And as all of us know, none of these relationships can really be pursued on different tracks. Georgia's relations with NATO, Russia, and the breakaway regions are in fundamental ways all part of the same puzzle. Madam Chairwoman, thank you very much for joining us today, and we welcome your comments and discussion on these topics.
Thank you very much. It's ladies and gentlemen, dear colleagues, it's indeed my great pleasure to address such a distinguished audience, and I extend my sincere gratitude to the Center for Strategic and International Studies for providing me this special opportunity to discuss contemporary developments in Georgia and its place in global politics. The end of 20th century was a period of vibrant political changes, a time of hope for millions when new independent countries emerged. These drastic changes gave birth to new challenges and spurred new formulations of such global priorities as peace and stability, the spread of liberty and common values, active economic cooperation, and the inclusion of energy in concept of security. In a modern globalized world, it's clear that instability in one part of the world can have effect far beyond the immediate region. It is also clear that the best means of security is through the enlargement of common democratic space. Because of this truth, the international community should spare no effort to help the states in transition to become full-fledged democracies. It is only democracy and democratic governance that guarantees the secure environment today. That is why the continuous international assistance is a decisive factor in order to support states in transition like Georgia. That is why we believe that through supporting democracy and stability in the Caucasus region and in Georgia, the world democratic community contributes to security and stability of all other countries. Being a transitional country located in a turbulent neighborhood with young and still fragile democratic institutions, Georgia understands better than anyone else how important stability is for ensuring proper direction of country's development. Our key priority is to ensure the irreversibility of democratic processes in Georgia, to build a strong democratic state which will be a reliable international partner. Our political leadership is working very hard to follow the track of democratic reforms. Usually such drastic reforms are very painful and quite often unpopular, and this has been true in Georgia. Building democracy in a country which has suffered from the decades of dictatorship is not an easy task. We are committed to work closely with international institutions and democratic states in our defense of shared values. At present, one of the main tasks for the Parliament of Georgia is the harmonization of our laws to meet international standards. But it should be emphasized that legal changes are not being adopted automatically, but are such scrutinized to ensure they benefit our citizens. Of course, Parliament has a decisive role in creating the legal basis for democratic reforms and overseeing proper implementation. In this regard, the Parliament of Georgia is setting a standard of accountability and transparency. I would like to underline that it is of crucial importance to strengthen the oversight function of the Parliament, especially now when the political opposition is not strong enough and three branches of government are run by members of the same political party. The state institutions are represented by the same political team. The Georgian people, through their votes and their support, gave us this opportunity, and we understand that we have to be especially careful to avoid mistakes and not to disappoint our people. According to the present rules of procedure, the opposition enjoys certain privileges such as setting the parliamentary agenda once a month, and has representation in a special group established to exercise oversight the defense budget and its classified expenditures. Yet we are prepared to do more to create better conditions and find new approaches to increase the involvement of the opposition in building our democracy. Therefore, according to the initiative and active involvement of the speaker, in this case it's me, and the ruling party, a new format of cooperation, interfactional group, has been established. The main goal of this group is to facilitate the possibility of reaching a consensus among the parliamentary factions, thus providing the opposition with an additional tool for participating in the decision-making process. However, despite all these achievements, much remains to be done, and success of our future development significantly depends on involvement and assistance of international actors. As an example, let me mention such an important direction as the rule of law and independent judiciary, which Georgian government identified as a key priority for 2007. We have already started fundamental reforms in the judiciary. The Parliament of Georgia adopted constitutional amendments that limit the presidential power to appoint judges, a completely new practice for the Georgian court system, trial by jury, was established and will start functioning in 2008. The government of Georgia is committed to continue these vital reforms to ensure the proper functioning and full independence of the judiciary. The laws adopted meet international standards, and now our efforts are aimed at perfecting the implementation of these laws. Implementation is not an easy task, you all know, and even when you have very strong political will, you need experience and you need time for implementation for such an important institutions. Once again, let me clarify that the Georgia society has already declared its solid will to become a full-fledged member of Euro-Atlantic institutions. These aspirations must not be subject to any kind of bargain or political manipulations. Georgia is devoted to its chosen path and will remain firm on our democratic journey to make our progress irreversible. I would say that this ultimate goal is not chosen for the reason of our security or economic stability only. We deem NATO as an institution and the main guarantor for the persistence of democratic changes in our country. This strive is strongly motivated by and based on the common values and principles that are shared by our nations, and that we are truly dedicated to follow. We seek to join NATO, not just for our security, but because we believe we can contribute to NATO's security as well. Georgia's integration in NATO has the support of Georgian society and the entire political spectrum. Membership in the alliance is supported by more than 80% of the population. Just several days ago, the Parliament of Georgia adopted a document of national consensus on NATO integration, jointly signed by all political parties, ruling and opposition. This document demonstrates that despite different approaches on many domestic issues, foreign policy and NATO integration is a matter of common vision for all Georgians, citizens, and political forces. The prospect of membership is a strong development incentive for the country, mobilizing society and in turn mobilizing the government. We don't want only to be a beneficiary of the positive outcomes that NATO membership may bring, but we are fully conscious and prepared to contribute our share to the international community. At this stage, Georgia is actively involved in international peace operations in Iraq and Kosovo. Today, after the United States and Great Britain, Georgia is a said country, according to the number of its military contingent in Iraq, and the government of Georgia has made its decision to increase the existence number up to 2,000 militaries, from 850 to 2,000. In the near future, Georgian troops will join the NATO mission in Afghanistan, despite of the fact that we are not NATO member countries yet. The decision to increase our military presence in Iraq was in many ways conditioned by the desire to contribute to the process of democracy building and the necessity to establish stability in this region. Being a closer neighbor to this unstable region, Georgia fully comprehends, sometimes even better than some of our partners, that the failure of democracy in Iraq would inevitably entail dramatic consequences for its immediate neighborhood and far beyond. This decision also is a vivid confirmation that Georgia is committed to the long-term strategic partnership, willing to take risks and share the burdens of protecting common interests in the 21st century. Ladies and gentlemen, undoubtedly, the main issue of contemporary global politics is energy. The political forecast is that the new order in the 21st century will be dominated by the war over resources. It goes without saying that the country which manages to win the fight for the leading role in energy resources and distribution market may feel free to determine political developments and the rules of the game. The global monopoly in energy is a very dangerous phenomenon, especially if the energy monopolist is a power whose policy and the methods that it uses for its implementation can be entitled in every possible way, but not as democracy. The monopoly that may result in artificial increase of gas and oil prices, and such unjustified increase may damage the economy not only of developing countries, but also of the states with developed economies. Sad to say, but today free economy and our free energy markets are facing a very serious problem, Russia. To be clear from the very beginning, my intention is not to blame Russia for everything. I simply want to illustrate the roots of the problem and explain why Russia is trying so hard to regain its influence in Georgia. Being the Black Sea coastal state, Georgia is a natural link between Europe and Asia and serves as a corridor for the transportation and distribution of energy resources. The region of the South Caucasus has grown in its strategic importance in recent years with the construction of new pipelines from the energy-rich region of the Caspian Sea to the Black Sea and the Mediterranean. Europe benefits from Georgia's favorable location and the full realization of transit potential that provides much-needed diversity of supply. Georgia already plays a major strategic role in transit of Caspian oil and gas resources to Western markets and possesses all necessary infrastructure to greatly extend oil and natural gas transit from the Trans-Caspian and Central Asia resources to Europe. Our role in diversification of energy supplies to Europe is one of the major reasons behind the external pressure Georgia experiences today. The issue of energy security has acquired particular relevance in the last months. As a result of Russian-Ukrainian and Russian-Belarusian gas disputes, mainly caused by Russia's political decision to increase the gas price, the energy flows to many European Union countries were disrupted. These actions were a warning to many in Europe. I hope so. Russia is intentionally trying to eradicate any possibility of diversification energy routes for Europe. We all remember how firstly Russia objected to the construction of the Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan and the Baku-Tbilisi-Erzurum pipelines. We remember its attempts to reroute the pipelines through Russian territory. At this stage, Russia's top target in securing its energy monopoly is to halt the European Union's high-priority Nabucco pipeline project for Caspian gas, which provides much-needed relief from overdependence on Russian gas. Without diversifying energy supplies and their transportation routes, Europe and other countries of Eurasian region will largely depend on a single partner who has used energy as a political weapon and as a mechanism for the political pressure. If Europe allows Russia to stop the Nabucco project, this truly important energy project aiming at transportation of Kazakh and Turkmen natural gas through Turkey to Europe, I would say that Europe itself will unilaterally contribute greatly to inevitable Gazprom's dominance. In a democratic world, reliable and predictable economic relations are essential for prosperity and freedom. Unfortunately, recent developments demonstrate that economic tools can be used as a means of pressure. Russian military and political authorities appear to believe that 19th-century tactics of violent nationalism and blunt economic pressure will not work in the globalized world of the 21st century. As you may know, in 2006, Russian Federation imposed full-scale economic embargo against all Georgian goods, including agricultural products, wine, and mineral waters, closed all legitimate border crossing points, seized transport and postal communications, restricted movement of people, launched large-scale state-sponsored campaign against ethnic Georgians living in Russia and Russian citizens of Georgian origin, leading to massive violations of basic human rights and widespread ethnic discrimination. The real purpose of these sanctions was to impede Georgia's independent development and try to reassert Russian political and economic control over my country. Unfortunately, despite multiple clear calls from the international community, Russia still has not abolished this blockade. All Russia did, as a gesture of goodwill, was to send its ambassador back to Georgia. Dear friends, I would say that this step was just a face-saving act and nothing more. Another vivid demonstration of Russia's imperial policy is the problem of uncontrolled and lawless territories in Georgia. The so-called frozen conflicts in Abkhazia and South Ossetia, artificially maintained by Russia, represent the most serious impediment for the consolidation of democracy and economic development in Georgia. These are the territories where international recognized ethnic cleansing against local Georgian population took place, and 300,000 ethnic Georgians and 100,000 other nationals had to flee from the places there and their families lived for generations. One of the main impediments to the peaceful resolution of existing conflict is the presence of Russian military forces in the conflict zones. In fact, these so-called peacekeeping forces serve as border guards protecting illegal de facto borders set by separatist regimes and safeguards the status quo. It is critical to internationalize the peacekeeping forces and demonopolize the Russian mandate to lay the foundation for resolving these conflicts. Recent events demonstrate the danger of the status quo. On March 12th, Russian military helicopters breached Georgia's air borders, bombed Upper Abkhazia, known as Kodori Valley, part of Abkhazia controlled by Georgia. In addition, artillery shells were also fired at the same region. These provocations served to one goal. Russia seeks to harm the international image of Georgia and portray it as an unstable and unpredictable country, and therefore unsuitable for NATO membership. We cannot allow the Russians to succeed in their efforts. Georgia is fully prepared for the comprehensive peaceful settlement of both conflicts. The Georgian government has prepared peace plans and detailed roadmaps approved by the OSCE for the resolution of these conflicts. Let me highlight that these plans are strongly supported internationally and were approved at OSCE Ministerial in Ljubljana. Moreover, we are dedicated to guarantee rights of every single ethnic Abkhaz and Ossetian in every part of Georgia. As for the regions themselves, we are ready to grant them a broadest model of autonomy that compares favorably to any country in the world. Far more autonomy, for example, than enjoyed by North Ossetia in the Russian Federation. In our vision, the Georgian central government would be responsible only for core functions of defense, border protection, and foreign policy. In upcoming months, the government of Georgia will present to international organizations such as OSCE, Council of Europe, European Union, United Nations, and others, new approaches, flexible ideas, and an updated roadmap for conflict resolution in South Ossetia. This roadmap will include the instruments for full reintegration of the local population into the Georgian society and state institutions, restitution of property rights, accommodation of cultural and educational needs, free mass media in native language. It provides possibility to have freely and directly elected local self-governance. We welcome the statement of United States State Department as supporting the territorial integrity of Georgia and recognizing the illegitimacy of the elections held in Abkhazia on 4th of March 2007 by de facto authorities. We also welcome the similar statements made by the European Union member states, Council of Europe, Baltic countries, Poland, as other like-minded countries for their support and their assistance. Let me remind you that it was only the Russian Federation that perceived these elections as being held in normal and quiet circumstances. Dear friends, if we get rid of everybody who has different point of view or totally compel any oppositional idea, I believe this will be a unique recipe for making all elections really quiet everywhere in the world, in every single part of the world. We hope to see high-level engagement of the international community in the process of conflict management to make real progress in 2007. We all should understand that unsolved conflicts are not simply a problem for Georgia or the long-suffering people of Abkhazia and South Ossetia. They are our common problems that create huge obstacles on the way to democracy, protection of human rights, and shared values. Having mentioned Russia in a negative context, I may receive a question from you. What are the authentic reasons for Russia to keep these conflicts frozen and exercise pressure on Georgia in general? Naturally, there should be no doubt that any normal country should be interested in having stable, free and peaceful neighbors. However, the problem is that the Russians use instability as an effort to secure its own influence in the region. Georgia appears to be the best last stand for Russians who bemoan the demise of the Soviet Empire. Russia seems to worry that Georgia will become a success story of democratic transformation, motivating other countries of former Soviet Union to select the way of democratic development and European and Euro-Atlantic integration. If successful, Georgian test case can end the whole concept of a near abroad where Russia exercises unique influence and the formula, as goes Georgia, so goes the neighborhood, is getting more and more alarming reality for Russian authorities. Our country has always been loyal to maintenance of friendly relations with its immediate neighbors in the region as well as with countries of Central Asia. As a result, Georgia enjoys the trust of many neighboring countries, which deem our country as a territory where everybody, even those in conflict now, can run the direct dialogue without any intermediates. This worries some in Russia. Also worrying to some in Russia is our declared aspiration to become a NATO and a European Union member in the future. NATO is the nearest future. European Union membership may be much longer way. I make this statement while being absolutely confident that Russia is determined to keep our bilateral relations strained. As a key precondition for better relations and progress in restoration of territorial integrity, Russia demands a total neutrality from Georgia. According to Russian understanding of neutrality, Georgia has to give up our sovereign right to strive for NATO membership. We know what Russia means by neutrality. We have very sad experience of trusting our northern neighbor exactly with regard to the neutrality, for it was independent and neutral Georgia that was attacked and occupied by Soviet Red Army in 1919. Dear friends, believe me, it would be a difficult task to understand why the Russian Federation is so afraid of NATO and other institutions such as European Union as its neighbors. But it is a stable environment for democratic development with values that are totally incompatible with Russia's contemporary realities that worries the Russian leadership. Those of you who read President Putin's speech at the recent security conference in Munich will see what I mean. We all know that Russia has its own vision for regional arrangement and it's struggling to redefine itself in the world where its influence and power are considerably less than they used to be. But we have never asked for the isolation of Russia. On the contrary, I argue attending representatives of all democratic nations to make the Russian leadership understand that true democracy is the only and ultimate chance to earn respect in contemporary international relations. A secure Caucasus and secure and free Georgia are not a threat to Russia or to anybody, just the opposite. Security in the Caucasus to a large degree means stability in the whole region and in Russia. A democratic and predictable Russia is not only in Georgia's interests, it's in the interests of all of us, and it's the interest of Russians themselves. Assistance to Russia in building a genuine democracy will be the best kind of assistance the international community could provide to Georgia, to other countries in transition. Ladies and gentlemen, in conclusion, let me stress again that unfortunately the problems exist and we should not ignore them. Right on the contrary, we should do our best, trying all possible ways to find the relevant solutions for all of them. I believe that all of us are aware of the need to learn from each other and to share the best practices adopted in each of our countries. Thank you very much for your attention, and I am open for your questions, if you have such.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairwoman, for your wide-ranging remarks, extremely open thoughts. Georgian-Russian relations, ethnic conflict, energy, NATO, Iraq, Afghanistan, democratic reform, parliamentary procedure. I think we have quite a lot of topics on our plate. Sometimes,
I try to cover everything.
and brilliantly so. So please offer your thoughts, short thoughts and questions. We have microphones, two microphones in the room. Please give your name and affiliation as well. Thank you.
Hi, Darren Spink with GSCG. The treason trial of Maya Taporia and other opposition figures began this week in Georgia. And international organizations, including the U.S. State Department, have constantly documented the lack of a judicial independence in Georgia. What is your government going to do and ensure that there is a fair trial and that there's no political interference by the executive branch?
Thank you. First of all, concerning political opposition and representatives of political opposition, one of the members of political opposition of the parliament is right now here. He's Mr. Tremoladze is a leader of one of the oppositional factions, and he is very active MP in the parliament and leader of one of the most popular oppositional party. And, of course, we have quite often serious discussions and critical discussions concerning these cases which you mentioned. First of all, I would like to say that we know about State Department's conclusions. We have partly our point of view concerning some of them. For example, concerning authority of the president, and I just told you that we reduced authority of the president concerning judges, and this was a very serious step forward to strengthen independence of judiciary. Concerning human rights and independence of judiciary, of course, we are not speaking that we have ideal situation in the country, and I think no one country in transition could say the same. We had very difficult heritage and we had very difficult past. But what we did during these 3 years after revolution, I think it's quite visible. We totally changed the legislation concerning independence of judiciary and we adopted all laws according to international standards. Now we are working very seriously on implementation processes. President mentioned during his speech in the parliament that what we did in the field of judiciary, we totally destroy corruption as institution in the country and totally destroy corruption in the courts. Now we are working very hard to really strengthen independence of judiciary, but it's not a task which you can solve just overnight, even when you have very serious political will to do so. We need some time, we need help, we need advices, we need cooperation with our foreign friends, and we are ready for this cooperation, and I think that all steps which we are doing now helping us really to strengthen independence of the judiciary. Concerning human rights, situation much better than it was even 1 year ago. I even don't want to compare what was 3 years ago in Georgia or 4 years ago. But of course, partly we still have problems, and I think that our strength is in this, that we are not closing eyes on the problems which exist, situation much better, and the goal is on the right track, but we are open for any discussions and any suggestions and any criticism. Some criticism are not really quite grounded, but there are some where we have to take into account realities and we have to improve the situation. Parliamentary committee is actively involved, press and media actively involved, and any cases which comes to the parliament with evidences, not only politically motivated, just go very carefully through the parliamentary committee on human rights and the parliamentary committee of judiciary reforms. So we are trying to react in every issue where we have some evidences that there is something which have to be react from the side of the government.
My name is Jana Atayans, and I work for the Open Society Institute, New York. I work for the International Harm Reduction Development Program, and our program helps to sustain human rights and health of such a vulnerable population as drug users in the former Soviet Union. So basically, I was moved by your statement that Georgia is trying to harmonize its laws with international laws. But, you know, at the same time, sadly, I think it still holds a conservative stand on drug policy. For example, your country is one of few in former Soviet Union or let's leave alone Europe, which still criminalizes simple drug use. And I know that in August of 2006, Parliament passed a law which increased administrative fines for drug use from 75 laris to 500 laris. And it was done so suddenly that our partners, NGOs, they even didn't have an opportunity to interfere. So I wonder if you, as a speaker of parliament and as a lawyer, if you're aware of this situation and how, I mean, what to do so such situation won't never happen again. Thank you.
Ambassador received some information, just somebody calls, which is interesting for me too. Thank you for the question. I think you have no enough information about recent realities in Georgia, because what you mentioned, it's not correct. People who are just only use drugs, it's a tragedy for every person and for every family. But these people are not punished according to our rules. Only people who are selling drugs, and I think that everybody will agree that this is really very serious crime. These people under very serious punishment according to our legislation. And by the way, I would like to say that now we are trying just to make this punishment even more stronger, just to confiscate goods and confiscate Koneba? Property for the people who are selling drugs and who are the groups or part of the criminal groups who are just trying to bring and sell drugs in the Georgian territory or nearby. This is a very serious problem, and unfortunately, I should say is that drugs problem in Georgia one of the most painful problems. Drugs were absolutely out of control during last decades of Soviet period, and it was absolutely out of control from 90 until 2000, 2003. And huge number of Georgian young people, unfortunately, using the drugs. So we should do something very seriously. In the parliament, we adopted a special concept, anti-drugs concept, where we are trying just to create good possibilities and real possibilities for the people who want to go to the hospitals and to rehabilitate themselves from this disease, and they are not under any punishment. Believe me, we can send you all legislation which we adopted and the new legislation which we are preparing, but you have no right information concerning this issue. Yeah, no problem at all. And by the way, you can use parliamentary website. Mr. Gagalashvili is a deputy chairperson of Health and Social Care Committee. If you would like just to ask him information, he can give you full information about recent developments.
Question over here. Welcome to Washington. I'm Keith Henderson with American University. I remember very vividly 10 or 12 years ago that virtually everyone I spoke to in Georgia said the back of corruption could not be broken. And people were very pessimistic about your reform efforts. And I'm wondering if you could reflect upon what you've done to, in fact, break the back of corruption, and what you would advise your neighbor, Azerbaijan.
Thank you very much for this question. Friendly to say, we are really very proud that we did really a lot in this direction. I didn't wanted to mention once again that Georgia was nominated as a country number one in fighting against corruption by World Bank, because we are using these facts and nominations quite frequently, and maybe sometimes it's boring for the people for whom fighting against corruption is normal. But for us, it was really a matter of our proudness that we did it. You are absolutely right. In 2001 and in 2003, before revolution, level of corruption in the country was so high that it was a threat for national security of the country. And I think one of the reasons why so many people really protested against the previous regime was the people had the feeling that country is really under very serious threat. And what was really very serious, there was syndrome of impunity in the country. Everybody knew at times that nobody will be punished. If ministers stolen just 1 or 2 or 5 million, the maximum punishment was replacement of this person from his position, sometimes even less. What we did, we declared fight against corruption, but we not only declared, but we really was and still fighting against corruption. There is no syndrome of impunity in the country. I'm not very happy to say this, but even among MPs, 3 members of majority, not opposition, 3 members of majority, our team, members of our team, people who were with us shoulder by shoulder during revolution, were arrested because they were involved in the corruption. Some representatives of very high positions in the agencies, in the ministries, and it's not very pleasant to see, but nevertheless, we are broadcasting it these issues by TV, just giving to the population information. This is one issue. And another issue, just to alarming the situation, to say once again that, look, everybody and will be punished, and there is no person who will be protected despite of the fact to which team he is belonging to. We punished a few very high-ranking members of previous government, but it was not enough, of course, to punish only previous government. So we are continuing these efforts, and if somebody from our team will do wrong things or is doing wrong things, they're under the same kind of punishment as the people who were in the previous government are. So I think that real political will and real political decision to punish anybody despite of political belonging is the main guarantee that you could really destroy corruption in the institution. We are not saying that, and we are not speaking that we have no corruption at all in the country. You can't say this, unfortunately, even in very old democracies. But we destroy corruption as institution totally, and we are really very proud about this. Thank you.
Corey. I'm Dave Smith. I'm director of the Georgian Security Analysis Center in Tbilisi. Kapodanino, thank you very much for an excellent speech. I'd like to make a small point and ask you 3 related questions about NATO. As you pointed out, on the evening between March 11th and 12th, there was an attack from Russia on Georgian territory. Apparently 4 to 6 helicopters, as far as we know, Mi-24s, penetrated Georgian airspace and actually attacked several villages in Upper Abkhazia. If Georgia had been a member of NATO at that moment, that would, of course, have been an attack upon the United States of America and on 26 other countries, and therefore it never would have happened. The question I'd like to ask, though, is, that being said, it's still going to make some allies a little bit nervous of the situation as Georgia approaches NATO. So I'd sort of like to ask you 3 questions. The first is, what would you say to some of those allies about the effect of Georgia's approach to NATO on the possibility of the resolution of the territorial conflicts? The second question is to the same allies that may have some doubts about Georgia joining NATO. There's going to be a cost-benefit analysis, which is not just going to be, has Georgia done its reforms? It's going to be, do we want Georgia as an ally? So when they do their cost-benefit analysis, what would you say to those allies? Why should they want Georgia as an ally? And my last question is, the Secretary General at the Riga Summit did not quite say but hinted that there might well be a possibility for Georgia to join NATO by 2009. Do you think that's a realistic date?
Thank you very much, David. And I really do hope that it's really very realistic timing, because timing is very important for Georgia's membership in NATO. Maybe what I will say now, it's partly the question concerning why Georgia should be a member of NATO, or what will be changed if Georgia will be a member of NATO. You all remember discussions concerning Baltic countries 10 years ago, and nobody believes at times that Baltics will be a member of NATO and European Union, and it was all absolutely unbelievable. Russia's reaction was absolutely the same, maybe worse. Then we have reaction concerning Georgia today. But what we received after Baltics entered in NATO, of course, they still have some problems with Russian Federation. It's quite difficult to be a neighbor of this country and not to have problems at all. And Baltics and some new democracies understand us quite well. But okay, they still have problems, but these problems, wording of discussion between Baltics and Russia are absolutely different. Wording is civilized, because Russia is speaking not only with Lithuania or Latvia or Estonia. Russia is speaking with the country and plus 25 or 24 countries behind them. And they should respect the family of NATO, and they should take into account that these countries are not alone. Same will be with Georgia, and I'm more than sure that Georgian membership in NATO will improve our relations with Russia. Now we are on the crossroad, and now Russia is trying just to create obstacles on our way to NATO using all possible mechanisms, like Kodori Valley's accident, which is unbelievable, and nobody could... Maybe somebody could explain me why Russia did it, because we didn't know this. We don't know, we can't understand what was the reason of this accident in Kodori Valley. There is no reasonable answer. But they are trying now to do everything just to stop Georgia's aspiration to NATO. As long as we will be on the crossroad, as worse for Georgia, for international stability, for Russian-Georgian relations, when a decision will be made, situation will go in more normal conditions. So I'm sure, and I think, and I hope that all our friends, not all of them, but most of them, understand that it's necessary to decide Georgian membership as soon as possible. In 2009... yes, it should be realistic. And we would like to ask you and United States officials and other friends just to think about membership action plan for 2007, for this year, because we are doing our reforms. When we are granted ID, intensified dialogue, you know, David, we just did everything concerning individual partnership action plan. And despite of this fact, some our neighbors, especially from the old Europe, they had some kind of concerns about local elections, about democracy. Okay, we had good, normal, democratic local elections. Despite of the fact that nobody invites during local elections international organizations, international observers, we did it because it was in our interest to be sure that elections really will be free and fair. That is why we invited everybody just to be and to take part during these elections. It means that we are on the right track. We are taking part in NATO operations. We are in Afghanistan, despite of the fact that we are not NATO members. We are in Kosovo, despite of the fact that we are not NATO members. I don't want to mention other countries, some other countries who are a little bit in front of us. But I'm sure that you all know, or people who are interested in NATO, that they are not much far in front in democratic processes, in processes of reforming, and so on and so on. But nevertheless, we are ready to go on and to do all these reforms, and we are sure that ID will be finished for July, and we will be ready for membership action plan during the fall of this year. And it's in our common interests to receive this decision as soon as possible. What we could bring in Europe and why Europe should just support Georgian membership in NATO? Because of many things. Because of common values, which are common for us and for Europeans, and we are part of Europeans. And according to some historical information, oldest European maybe, but okay, no, so we will not push this information about. But we have all evidences about this. We share the same values. We are trying to strengthen democracy not in only in our country but far abroad. We are trying to prove to other countries that democracy is only one right way how to be developed. I think that stability in the Caucasus region depends a lot from the stability of Georgia. Energy security, which I already mentioned, and there are, here we have huge possibilities. And this is new pipelines, for example. We are not suggested to anybody to build or open new pipelines instead of pipelines which already exist, or to close pipelines which Russia used, for example. Of course not. There are too many resources in Caspian, and needs are growing. So I think we need some more pipelines, new pipelines, and alternative routes, and conflicts. By the way, quite often, very experienced people were asking me, why Russia wants to keep these conflicts frozen? It's not logical. It's not just correct. And it's not in their interest to have sources of instability near their borders. Yes, of course it's so. But unfortunately, there is no logic sometimes and quite often in Russia's actions. They are trying to keep these conflicts unsolved because they think that these unsolved conflicts will be obstacles on our way to NATO. And what are our suggestions? I mentioned it during my speech. We want to have really political and diplomatic solution for these conflicts. We are doing a lot in our country. We rebuild infrastructure. We increased budget 6 times. We are really making economic reforms. We are trying to have as many foreign investments as possible. So we need development. We don't need war. So we have huge number of new suggestions and ideas how it's possible to find peaceful solution for these two conflicts. What we need international involvement, we need international support, and I am sure that NATO membership, even in this direction, will help us very seriously to find peaceful solution for these conflicts very, very soon. And it will be unique example that peaceful solution of the conflict is possible.
Thank you. I want to elaborate on something you said and ask you a question regarding Russia's policy on these issues. Since, I'd say, at least the 2004 election in Ukraine, Russia has also discovered the uses of what we call soft power. And in Georgia in particular, I think there are many in Russia who have seen that there's a possibility to promote Russian interests, Moscow's interest in Georgia, by trying to convince either segments of the population or the population more broadly that NATO membership would be bad for Georgia vis-a-vis the conflicts, it would be bad for Georgia vis-a-vis the internal situation, and it would be bad economically. And so I want to ask you what your take is on the reaction to these kinds of statements within Georgia. Are there segments of the population, either regionally or generationally, that are sympathetic to these kinds of calls from Russia?
Thank you. These terms like this, a soft power, liberal empire, it's, you know, maybe soft, it's soft from here. I'm not sure there's the assurance that it's quite soft just when you are living in Ukraine or in Georgia. And the same concerning liberal empire when Russia is speaking about just that they don't want to have empire like Soviet Union, they want to have some kind of liberal empire. When the difference is not very big, really. Just when Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Lavrov, who is really very experienced diplomat, is speaking, I don't want to say this, but in the same wording, using the same wording as Zhirinovsky, for example, he used the when he's saying that Russia will not allow Georgia to be a member of NATO, what does it mean? Who gives the power to Mr. Lavrov or anybody else outside of Georgia to allow or not to allow to decide in which organization Georgia want to be. It's up to Georgia to decide when or in which organization Georgia want to be, and it's up to members of this organization, NATO or European Union or some others, to decide, do they want to join other countries like Georgia or not? Nobody have rights just to dictate that Georgia have rights to be a member of NATO or not. Of course, Lavrov had all rights just to express his own personal views that Russia, for example, that Russia don't want to see Georgia in NATO, which is normal. But Russia will not allow Georgia to be a member of NATO. I'm sorry, it's fortunately 21st century, and I think that international community will help any sovereign country to decide where and what kind of decisions these countries want to make. And concerning population and concerning these arguments, unfortunately, last time I'm always trying when I'm speaking about Russia to prepare the speeches, just not to criticize Russia too much when I have just written speeches. It's I'm trying to keep myself in the frames. But it's a little bit difficult when I'm not using the written speeches. But, you know, believe me, it's not easy for me and it's not pleasant for me to criticize Russia. When I said something like this to my colleague, distinguished colleague, Mr. Mironov, that, Mr. Mironov, believe me, I'm not happy to criticize Russia. He said that, you know, it's not look like this when you are speaking about Russia. But believe me, it's so. I'm not happy to criticize this country. I really want, and we really want, to have normal and civilized relations with this huge and quite serious country, which has really serious potential. And we will do our best to improve these relations despite of difficulties, and we will put steps forward to find solutions with this country. But these steps might be just could be done only if there will be bilateral movement. If Russia will respect our territorial integrity, if Russia will really respect our sovereignty, and if our relations will be really equal, we are ready to respect their legal interests, but only legal interests, which does not mean to restore a liberal empire. But if they are speaking about security, if they are speaking about fighting against terrorism, if they are speaking about cooperation and so on and so on, we are ready for cooperation. Concerning this NATO membership, you know, quite often when Russia is speaking about Georgia's relations with NATO or Ukrainian relations with NATO, some politicians in Russia and some media representatives, they're lying. Because in many, many directions, Russia have quite serious and deep cooperation with NATO, sometimes deeper than, for example, Ukraine or Georgia had even 2 or 3 years ago. You know, there is a Council 90 plus one. They have common trainings together with NATO forces. So they are cooperating with this organization. So in Georgia, people know that in our interest to be a member of NATO, and it's a guarantee of security, stability, and democratization processes. And I told, I would like to mention once again that I saw last polls just 1 week ago. According to these polls, more than 80% of population, 80, support Georgian aspiration to NATO. All political parties except one or two, one, except one. Supported Georgian membership in NATO. This is absolutely clear.
And has that support increased or decreased since the blockade?
These figures are quite stable during the last years because first resolution, for example, in the parliament we adopted in 1999 and then in 2001, concerning NATO membership. And all resolutions goes in the parliament unanimously. and we have unanimous support.
Good afternoon. My name is Annalise Canty. I'm with the Defense Department. I have a question for you concerning Georgia's geographical location. It's obviously on the crossroads between east and west, as Georgians are fond of saying, and I think it gives Georgia quite an advantage to its culture and its heritage, but at the same time, it presents a lot of challenges as well. As you mentioned earlier, pipeline security obviously is a major issue, the trafficking of narcotics as well, given its location. And very recently, we saw in press reporting the movement of radiological material, which occurred last year, an attempt to move nuclear material across Georgia's borders. So my question is actually on that specifically. What is currently being done to safeguard Georgia's borders, to increase the security on the borders, to prevent the movement of materials, of illicit materials in general, on the one hand, and on the other hand, given Russia's attempts to cross the borders as well? This bombing of the Kadori Gorge, of course, is not the first sort of infraction we've seen. So how do you envision, is it a two-prong approach to protect Georgia's borders? Or what's currently being done? I'd appreciate any thoughts you have on the matter. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. First of all, you mentioned trafficking, which is a very important issue, and we in the parliament, we are working very seriously to create serious legal basis for protection, to avoid trafficking and for protection of victims of trafficking. And I think that we just finished this work totally. We signed all international agreements, conventions, and we implemented all these obligations in the local legal documents. And now we are advertising a campaign against trafficking in TV and radio and in newspapers. So we're trying really to inform people very seriously, because we had, unfortunately, serious number of people who are victims of trafficking, not only Georgians, but people from Central Asia, from Ukraine, who just cross in previous years Georgian border and then just reached other countries. So this is a serious issue. Concerning nuclear elements, you know that there was a very serious scandal, and some Russian officials and some representatives of so-called South Ossetia authorities were involved in this scandal. We are open for the cooperation with everybody, and by the way, we have, despite of very serious difficulties in political field, sometimes we have quite good cooperation with Russian special forces and special agencies in fighting against terrorism and in fighting against this illegal migration and so on. I think that we should continue this cooperation and we should deepen the cooperation, because without cooperation between neighboring countries, it will be absolutely impossible just to totally close this border, because who visited even once Georgian border, especially northern border, will agree with me that this is a very complicated region. High mountains, Caucasus mountains, and you can't just close every part of this border. Now the budget just find a possibility to financing border guarding department very seriously, but still we are working very hard to increase this budget. And by the way, I think that it will be very useful if some international organizations and United States border guarding department or other countries' border guarding departments will help us in this direction. This department have good relations with German border guarding system. We are working quite seriously with Baltics. So we are trying to manage this system as normal and developed countries are doing. But we need financing, we need technical equipment, we need night vision. Devices. Thank you. So team is working, you see. So help is needed, really. But I think that we have really serious progress in this direction.
Anyone Brian Beery. I'm a reporter for Europolitics. Just wanted to ask about the European Union. You seem to say that you were also interested in joining the EU. Can you just explain what's Georgia's strategic interest in joining the EU? And then more concretely, how far down that road have you gone in terms of filing candidacy, et cetera, and what kind of response and reaction have you got from Brussels so far?
Concerning European Union membership, I mentioned that it's a much more long-term perspective than NATO membership, and we understand this quite well. And frankly to say, our priority number one is NATO membership, not European Union membership. But to have closer cooperation with European Union is important for Georgia, first of all, because we see ourselves as Europeans. The second is that we want just to be closer with European standards in many, many directions, not only taking into account economic stability or level of economy, but, I mean, human rights and some other democratic issues which are quite strong in the European Union member countries. So that is why we harmonize our legislation with European legislation, despite of the fact that we are not members, even we are not associated members. We want to create even minimum standards, especially in human rights dimension, in freedom of speech, and some other in global this global democratic directions. And I think that for now, priority number one concerning European Union is to just realize neighborhood policy, which adopted by European Union for Georgia and for some other countries, which means to have closer cooperation with European structures, which means to make our standards higher, and which means to involve Georgia in many European issues and European security issues. So on this stage, this is, which is absolutely enough for us.
Brook Milikian from World Security Institute. Regarding the local elections, could you give an overview about the situation with ethnic minorities in local governments? And are these ethnic minorities overrepresented or underrepresented in these governments? And what is the situation, especially in Samkhe Javakhetia region, which is mostly populated by Armenians? Thank you.
Thank you. Concerning this region, Samtsa-Javakheti, this is a really region where mostly local population are Armenians. And fortunately, these people took part very seriously and actively during these local elections, which means that they think and correctly think that they are part of the society and they are part of this common country. By the way, yesterday I had a meeting with representatives of Millennium Challenge Corporation, and we are spending a quite serious amount of money, especially in this region. And by the way, especially because this region is in this region, population mostly Armenian. So we wanted just to send a message to these people that we want to improve their life. We want to build new roads and infrastructure to give them possibility to be integrated in Georgian political and everyday life. I'm afraid to give you right figures because, unfortunately, I have no the exact figures. But you can go to the website of Georgian Central Election Commission. This is site CIC.g, and you can look all figures concerning participation of the people in different regions and who was elected and who were represented. Friendly to say, I don't want just to say that these people were elected because they're Armenians or they're Russians or they're Azeris and they're elected because of their Georgians. As I am against and elections only because somebody is woman or somebody is man. I think it's some kind of positive discrimination, and I will be not very happy if somebody will tell me that I was elected as a Speaker of the Parliament only because I am woman. I think that it's not correct, and the same concerning national minorities. You should not stress every time that they are elected only because they are Armenians or only because they're representatives of other minorities, but of course these people should have full possibility to represent local population in the local governance. This is why local elections is going on. I think that we have no problems in this direction, mostly. Of course, there are maybe some problems in every region, but there is no specific problems in this direction in this region, despite of the fact that in this region we had Russian military base. And this base tried to use local population to protest against withdrawal of Russian military bases from this territory. But these people are clever enough, and they are not allowed some other peoples from outside to use them in some other's interests. And they are not protested about withdrawal of Russian military bases. We gave them new jobs. We are trying now to build new possibilities to give them possibilities to work. And we will do our best to integrate these people in Georgian society. By the way, they are very actively involved now in the process language learning, because some of these people, unfortunately, don't know Georgian language. They speak Armenian, and they speak Russian. It's not their fault. It was former Soviet Union, and communicating language was Russian. But now these people are very supportive, and they study Georgian, and we have good examples when some students from Akhalkalaki, for example, people who even 2 years ago didn't know Georgian language, successfully passed exams in national universities, and they presented this nation quite seriously there. Thank you.
I'm Tracy Fries. I'm an independent journalist. I just wanted to ask a question, two questions. You mentioned South Ossetia and a new roadmap. Could you evaluate the ongoing peace process, and what do you expect from a new roadmap? And you mentioned increased troop deployment to Iraq. How do you expect to train and equip those troops, and how do you expect that to affect the ongoing peace process with South Ossetia, and particular with regards to Georgia-Russia relations? Thank you.
Thank you. Concerning roadmap, I think it's really very interesting document. And this roadmap was supported by everybody during Ljubljana ministerial, OSCE ministerial last year. Unfortunately, then this... okay, I don't want to mention Russia, but what to do? Unfortunately, after Ljubljana ministerial, Mr. Lavrov announced that there is no peace plan at all. It was really unbelievable and very big surprise, because Russia was among supporters of this roadmap in Ljubljana, and Mr. Lavrov was attending this Ljubljana ministerial, and 2 weeks after, he declared that there is no peace plan at all. Okay, in any case, this peace plan exists. And now in 2 weeks, our prime minister will present this roadmap or peace plan, updated peace plan, in front of the OSCE Permanent Council in Vienna. And what we need really, we need to bring police forces in the conflict region. This is very important, because imagine the situation in Abkhazia and in South Ossetia. There are peacekeeping forces who are Russians, who are under Russian control. And by the way, these people openly declared that they are here because they are here to protect interests of Russian population in Abkhazia and South Ossetia. So if they are protecting Russian population, they are not neutral. So we need neutral forces, neutral police forces, and we are ready for negotiation with both sides. You know that maybe you know that there is a Kokoiti who is represented part of Ossetian de facto authorities, And there another part, Sanakoev, who is represented another part of Ossetian population. We are not recognizing Kokoitian, Sanakoev, but we are ready to speak with both of them to find some kind of solution. And in case of very serious international involvement, this roadmap have serious future. We begin a very serious rehabilitation process in South Ossetia. European Union, by the way, was very helpful in this direction, and they donated 50 million euros for rehabilitation of this region. We are not against, just opposite. We are trying just to bring some economic movement and economic dynamic in this region. Maybe it will help just to make people closer with each other. But police forces will be very helpful. Demonopolization of the conflict. To withdraw. We are not against Russian soldiers there. We are not putting question like this that no one Russian soldier in Abkhazia, no one Russian soldier in Ossetia. Russia could send soldiers among other international forces. We have no phobias against Russia, fortunately. And by the way, when it happened, what happened concerning Georgian population in Russia, when people were kicked out from Russia only because they were Georgians. People were stopped in the streets because they had black, dark hair and dark eyes. Could you imagine this in 21st century? It was unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable. Children were not allowed to go to the schools, and there were some signs in the schools that Georgian children and Georgian teachers are not allowed to go to the schools. Absolutely unbelievable. Even despite of this fact, in Georgia you can't find anti-Russia feelings. I mean, Russia as a national and phobias against some nationalities. Of course, you can find very serious anti-Russian policy feelings among 95% of population, if not among others. But it's not a phobia. So this is what I said, because we are not against some Russian soldiers in these peace processes. Okay, they are welcome if they will be neutral, but they could not have any monopoly in these conflict regions. And you asked about troops. You know, these people are partly already trained, of course, because we have professional army, and these people know that Iraq is not a place where they are going to have a rest. This is quite serious and dangerous place, and these people are ready to help alliance when help is needed. So in any case, despite of any just decision, your troops will be in Iraq even for a few months, at least for a few months. So we think that as we already always have support from the side of United States and international community, we should bring our share when help is really needed. I'm not sure that Russia will be happy about this decision. Maybe not. We did not ask them. I don't know their opinion.
I think we have time for one final question. Any questions? Last question.
Thank you for very interesting presentation and briefing. I have a question regarding the ethnic issues of Georgia, because Georgia is a multinational country. That's regarding the repopulation of Turk Meskhetians in Georgia, which is, if I'm not mistaken, commitment of Georgia in front of Council of Europe. So what's Georgia doing in this way? And there are a lot of talks about the repopulation of Turk Meskhetians, especially in the Samsa Cevahkese region, which is, as was mentioned, populated especially by Armenians, and due to the some difficult relations, historical relations between Armenia and Armenians and Georgia, Armenian and Turkish people, whether it can increase some tension in this region. So what's the Georgia authorities' position in this regard, and what Georgia government doing in this way? Thank you.
Thank you. This is a really quite complicated question, and you are absolutely right that we have obligations in front of the Council of Europe just to adopt a law concerning these people, because they were deported during Stalin's regime in 1944, and of course they were punished that time, deported from these places. And this obligation should be respected. But we are ready to adopt this law and to give a possibility to the people who want to come back, because lots of people, they really don't want now to come back, because some of them are living in Russia, some of them are living in Turkey, some of them are living in Europe, even in United States. So some people really don't want to come back because it's already 60 years past, and there are few people, maybe not few, but part of the people who want to come back. But our preconditions are that these people should live everywhere in Georgia, but not in one place, like Samtskhe-Javakheti or others, because we mentioned already that in Samtskhe-Javakheti, Armenian population are living now, and we can't make the same mistake according to Armenian population now what was done according to Turkmenistanians. So these people who are living in Samtskhe-Javakheti, they are not guilty that they are living there. So they need normal conditions. Of course, I hope that one day relations between Armenians and Turks will be friendly and good, but now it's a problem, unfortunately, and we have to take into account this problem in any case. So we respect feeling of security these people, and there will be no decision to bring these people only in one region. Not only in Samtskhe-Javakheti, by the way, in other regions too. Because if these people think that Georgia is their homeland, it does not matter where they will live. And they should try not to live together just because they are, as they are saying, they are Georgians, but to live everywhere in Georgia. They are free to choose any place, to be involved and to be integrated in Georgian society. So, of course, there is no threat to bring these people, 100,000 Turkmenistanians in Samtskhe-Javakheti, because everybody understands that it might create serious problems in this region. So I think it's clear. Local population knows about this. Turkmenistanians knows about this. We are very honest in these relations, and we are openly saying to these people what are our plans and what are our suggestions, because we don't want to disappoint them just afterwards when they will come back in the country. So this is our position, which is without any changes already for a few years. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you again for your wide-ranging comments, and we wish you a lot of success in here, and we remain confident of Georgia's success in the future. Appreciate
Thank you.
It. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.